Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, friends and allies and students scattered through time and space, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, talking again on July 7th from Andalusia in Spain. This would be Navigator Briefing 15. The title is Proof of Love. And it's a follow-up to Navigator Briefing 14, which I just completed, entitled Cosmic Novelty. I got the headphones working, so this ought to be somewhat better sound quality than the previous briefing. Now, I'm going to use this briefing to bring you up to date on the sequence of the perigee surges. Let's recall the motif of perigee hits, divine alchemy. Contrast this to the motif of apogee hits, divine memory. This is the syntax for our method. I repeat that, and you can repeat that to yourselves as many times as you like, because it will train your NLP to be effective in this experiment. Now, before I launch into this commentary, I'd like to say a few more comments about what's been going on lately to get you current with me in my own personal reality, if I might use that pretentious term. Once again, I want to thank you all for your more than human patience with the Navigator. I don't know, some of you may have just signed off because you haven't heard from me. Some of you, I know, have been concerned about me. I'm very well, and I thank you for your love and your support, which I do feel. Another factor that has kept me from reporting as frequently as I would like to have done is that I am under very close instruction here. Myself, you know, early on when I was writing about planetary tantra in 2008, I compared myself to a weatherman who is navigating in the storm front that he's describing. I also used the analogy of whitewater rafting. I said, if you're on a whitewater rafting tour in a kayak or on a raft, and you're going down the rapids, it's not really easy to be keeping notes and writing down notes on what's happening as you're going through that tumultuous passage. And this has really been the case with me, and it's generally the way I live now. Of course, as the Nahual, one of my responsibilities is to steady the approach to the unknown, to the supernatural. So it's part of my discipline to be able to write notes while I'm going over the waterfall in a kayak. And I can to a certain degree. But I must say that I've been really up against some very close instruction over the last 2 or 3 months. And I want to return to this matter of communication that I discussed in the previous briefing. To be more precise, the matter of our reliance upon archonic technology for communication. There are several aspects to the close instruction that I've been receiving. Basically, I can indicate two ongoing veins of instruction, as it were. One of them concerns the alternative communication that would become possible planet-wide with the breakdown or burnout of the archonic technology on the planetary scale. Certainly, it would be a great thing if a solar flare or a release of an electromagnetic pulse from the Earth due to Mantis exiting, if you want to put it imaginatively, certainly it'd be great if that fried the electronic surveillance equipment that is used for monitoring the population of this planet, monitoring the native animal population for the purpose of domination, population control, mind control, and eventually for democide or destruction of the population by the governments. It would be great if that happened, because World War III wouldn't happen. World War III wouldn't be possible if the drones all fell out of the sky at the same instant, and if the surveillance technology from based in orbiting satellites was immediately nullified, either by an electronic pulse coming from the Earth or from the Sun or from both. And who's to say that that Gaia, Sophia, the planetary mother animal, is not collaborating very closely with the Sun on this point? Part of my instruction tells me this to be the case. There's a lot to say, and I don't know in certain respects even where to begin to tell you what I'm learning. You know, I don't tell you what I know. Remember that. I'm different from any other teacher. I don't tell you what I know. I tell you what I'm in the process of learning. And this is much more difficult, my friends. If I just sit back on my heels and tell you what I know, that's relatively easy. And of course, sometimes I do that. But that's only about a tenth of what I'm transmitting. The real transmission of Kala Tantra and Planetary Tantra is a spontaneous learning process in which you learn what I'm learning at the same time that I'm learning it. This is how a teacher of Planetary Tantra operates. And so I've been learning so much over the last 3 months, I sometimes don't know where to begin. I'm going to try right now, in this follow-up briefing, to tell you first what I've been learning, and then to go into the review of the perigee surges. Two veins of instruction concern communication and transpeciation. Now, let me take the second first. Transpeciation is a name that I received at the time that I received the first terma, the first Gaian terma, which I have never published. I call this terma the Gaia Sapiens Exchange. Gaia hyphen Sapiens Exchange. And I received this terma in Arc, France, in May of 2011, in an altered state of telestic trance on a hillside above Rennes-le-Château. And when I received this terma, which is a proto-terma and prior to the 2008 transmission of Planetary Tantra, 8 years prior to it, actually, I was in intense two-way conversation with the planetary mother animal. And at that time, Vivi herself, although I didn't know it was Vivi at that time, I didn't have that name, instructed me in how she achieves the transition and continuity from one kalpa into the next, or at least in how she would ideally like to achieve it. One of the planetary animal mother's problems is continuity from one kalpa into the next. She's like an artist who gets to a certain point in a project, and then she sees already her next project, her next painting, her next sculpture. Well, you're going to begin the next sculpture when you're still in the process of finishing the first one. How do you do that? She's going to begin Anthropos 11 now, while she's still in the process of correcting the experiment of Anthropos 10. How's she going to do that? She instructed me on the particulars of this, and let me tell you, particulars is not an understatement. And some new syntax came into my NLP from this instruction of May 2008. A key term in this syntax was transpeciation. Vivi showed me how she achieves transspeciation, that is to say, the method by which she carries over our species from one kalpa into the next, from one experiment into the next. So the transition to the next kalpa is in about 200 years. 2216 AD is the formal calendric date, for what that's worth, for the end of this kalpa, or 26,000-year cycle, which is one day of Ionic time. So at the end of one day, she reviews the experiment. She cleans up the parts of the experiment that do not work, which she's doing right now. It involves a massive bleaching out of the human genome, by the way, in case you haven't noticed. And a lot of the one part of the instruction that I'm getting now about transspeciation is about how she is actually effectuating changes in the atmosphere, working with the sun, producing these milky skies. Now, I'm not saying that chemtrails don't exist. They do, certainly. I'm not saying that the Morgellons phenomenon does not exist. It certainly does. And I am not resisting or refuting any of you many, many folks out there who have direct observational evidence of these phenomena. But what I am putting before your mind is one consideration. How much of the anomalous modifications of the Earth's atmosphere are actually due to a deliberate program of geoengineering? By contrast to how much is due to two other factors. The first of these factors being that with the rise of electronic technology and wireless technology since the 60s and 70s, and especially cell phones and cell phone towers and orbiting satellites transmitting signals, due to all that, there is massive electromagnetic pollution on Earth. And who's to say that a great deal of this atmospheric phenomena we're seeing is just a side effect of this electronic and electromagnetic pollution of the Earth, rather than due to a deliberate and sinister program? Break that down in your mind, and break it down very carefully. I am also receiving close instruction on the banded spectral animation of the atmosphere. That is to say, that as she prepares the atmosphere itself for the conditions of continuity of experiment into the next kalpa, we can expect that the atmosphere becomes banded and appears as a banded spectrum. By that I mean the visible atmosphere of the Earth. Now, look at the chemtrail phenomenon. What do you see? You see bands in the sky. Obviously, I would never deny that some of these bands are coming from airplanes. They are trails laid down by airplanes, no question about it. And it's a very mysterious and baffling and exasperating and infuriating phenomenon to observe, because in some cases, these airplanes appear to be commercial planes that are laying down these bands in the sky. Chemtrails. In some cases, I can't even tell what kind of vehicle, what kind of aerial vehicle is laying down these bands. Doesn't even appear to be a commercial plane. It appears to be some kind of a phantom airplane that has a white, opaque type of body, as if it were made out of white plastic, you know? What is it called? I'm looking for the right word. A resin. Is like, are these vehicles made out of resin, some kind of resin, and they are driven by an electromagnetic pulse propulsion system, and they are emanating these bands because they move three times faster than any commercial plane? This is undoubtedly happening. But at the same time, Sophia herself is producing aerial and atmospheric phenomena leading to a banded atmospheric sheath. And so I would ask you to distinguish between that part which you would attribute to deliberate geoengineering program and genocidal or democidal pollution to poison us. That part which is due to anomalous effects of electromagnetic pollution of the lower atmosphere. And that part which is due to Sophia's own reconfiguration of the total electromagnetic field of the Earth from the core out to the ionosphere. Not to mention the sun's participation in that reconfiguration process. So what I'm getting by instruction, close and intense instruction, and observation of the sky, is that we are challenged now to observe what she is doing, what she is naturally and supernaturally doing to modify this atmosphere of the Earth by way of transition to the next kalpa. And do not attribute that to human intention. So I strongly advise you to do as I'm doing and to learn to make this distinction. I've taken some pictures. I regret that I can't provide you with a coherent or comprehensive report on what I'm seeing. But I've seen the sky here in Spain. I've seen chemtrail phenomena. I've seen days of milky skies, which I don't feel well at all. They don't occur often, but they occur once in a while. But I've also seen other phenomena in the banding of the sky. I've seen massive bands across the sky that have nothing to do with this chemtrail phenomenon, as it's called. So I ask you to see if you can come up with any similar or parallel observations. Additional to the instruction, ongoing instruction on transpeciation, there's another factor which I am obliged to disclose. However, I can't disclose it in any detail in these NAB briefings. I want to point out that a while back I firewalled the Gaia navigation experiment against certain taboo subjects in Kala Tantra. You did not sign on to this experiment to be committed to Kala Tantra and to the triple ritual activity of love, war, and magic. That's a Kala Tantra practice. That's a commitment that you can make above and beyond your involvement in this experiment. So I'm not going to talk about some intimate disclosures that I've received. I want to point out that there are currently, this is another development that has happened over the last 2 months, there are currently only 3 original sources of planetary tantra and Kala Tantra on the internet. I'm no longer doing any interviews, no longer accepting any interviews, because people who do interviews can't follow me correctly, and they do not handle me correctly. So I've refused an interview with Veritas and people like that. I may do one final interview with Red Ice. Currently, the only sources for audio files from me on the internet are Gaia Spora, where you find these NAV briefings listed, metahistory.org, in the section of Planetary Tantra, where I may be posting talks on Kala Tantra and Planetary Tantra. I'll signal when that occurs. And finally, on Kali Rising. Those 3 internet sites are the only places on the internet that are currently presenting original audio from John Lash, talks with Thomas Malone, having been discontinued at his choice. Now I'm jumping around a little here, but bear with me. Just to complete this brief mention, I feel a bit awkward talking about this, but I'll say what I can without crossing the boundary that I myself have established. In May of 2008, in May of 2000, I received some initial instructions on transfiguration. I was shown some marvelous things about how, for instance, Sophia will tag individuals. She can actually tag you the way that an anthropologist would tag an animal if they were, for instance, wanted to track the migrations of caribou or wanted to track the migrations of certain birds. They would tag a certain animal and follow that animal for the benign purpose of observing the behavior of that species of animal, the caribou or the black swans of Australia or whatever, for the benign purpose of observing them, learning more about them, and perhaps in some way protecting and assisting them. You know, this can be done as a benign activity. She can tag us in a way that's remarkably similar to the use of dyes in DNA identification of criminal evidence. And she'll tag you by the intensity that collects in your ribosomes. This is absolutely astonishing to behold. And so she explained to me that she would tag certain individuals and that in order to resurrect a species through pralaya, that is to say, through the period of time in transition from one kapa to the next, when a species might be extincted. She can resurrect any species that she extincts, but she doesn't resurrect most of them. She would always resurrect the human species from quasi-extinction, because we're the principal species in this experiment. She showed me how she does it by tagging certain individuals based on the luminosity of the hues that collect in their ribosomes. What I understood at that time, 12 years ago, and what I continue to learn now with increasing, let's say, precision, and increasing certitude, is the manner in which the pleromic aeons actually do witness our experiment, as well as the manner in which she, in particular, can act upon the experiment from within it. As I said at the conclusion of the briefing on cosmic novelty, this is the great exceptional adventure of this moment on planet Earth, the moment when the wisdom goddess herself overcomes the previous disadvantages of, so-called disadvantages of her situation in having been morphed into a planetary body, which was not her original intention. She overcomes these conditions and now is able to exert an exceptional influence upon the experiment from within the experiment. To be even more precise, the aeons, including the Divine Sophia, monitor the experience of human animals by the flicker and flash of hues, H-U-E-S, hues of intensity in the ribosomes, in the structure of the ribosomes. And actually, these use of intensity in your body, in your colloid, in the colloidal activity of your body, the most intense colloidal activity in the human body is the production of ATP in the ribosomes. That is the actual miracle of life itself. It's not DMT, it's ATP. And as your ribosomes produce, let me rephrase this. As you experience and engage with the life of the planet more intensely and more specifically, as you, the human animal, are more sentiently in love with the life of the planet and engage it, the evidence of your engagement appears to the aeons as flickers and flashes of colored hues in your ribosomes. And what Sophia does in transpeciation is that she actually collects these hues. They appear in an imminent and transitory fashion. You might consider them to be like the flickering of fireflies, the light of a firefly flickering in a field. I have seen this in Maine when I was a child. I used to walk in the big field across from the Little Red Schoolhouse in Maine in the height of the summer days when the grass was up to my waist or higher as a child, and see the entire field occupied by fireflies flickering, your ribosomes flickering like fireflies in the observation of the aeons. But Sophia, who is in the direct presence of this colloidal luminal activity and actually herself permeates it and supports it, can manipulate it. And she gathers these flickers and deposits them in the extra nucleic DNA. There is something in each cell of each human body called extra nucleic DNA. That is the DNA in your colloidal makeup as a living creature that is not part of the genomic transfer mechanism of chromosomal DNA. It's extra nucleic DNA. I would point out, by the way, that Lynn Margulis developed her theory, her part of the Gaia hypothesis, on the basis of her observations of extranucleic DNA. So, there is an ancient fairy tale, an ancient fable that survives from the classical period. It's called The Legend of Eros and Psyche, or The Legend of Cupid and Psyche. And this legend describes Psyche as a young girl who has a kind of transcendental romance with this mysterious figure of Eros. And what is Eros? It's like this golden, white, luminous male entity that comes out of the sky and comes into the natural world where Psyche lives. And there is a transpersonal, transcendent love and an erotic connection between the male Eros and the female Psyche. In this legend, which I encourage you all to read and find, it's also called The Legend of Amor and Psyche. Psyche, who is described as a kind of handmaiden, finds herself in a peculiar and stressful situation. She is like a young servant to some royalty, and she has a burdensome task, which is to collect and count seeds. And I'm talking about a lot of seeds. And this is all she ever does. The peculiar thing about Psyche's situation is that she is a young maiden, as is Pam. I've told you, and please pay attention, she's 23 years old in cosmic terms. This young maiden, who is our planetary animal mother, is represented as Psyche in the ancient initiatory fairy tale. Psyche, you can translate that to anima mundi, the soul of the world. She is the soul of the world. And what is the soul of the world occupied doing? What is she occupied with? She's occupied with the meticulous and arduous task of collecting and counting and organizing endless piles of seeds. Now, this fairy tale is an analogy, is an analogy slash hint slash clue to what I've just been talking about. And the factor of eros or amor in this story fits into the Sophianic vision story, and you know exactly how, don't you? Who came at a certain point? What divine figure from the higher regions of the sky came to earth at a certain point to assist the divine Sophia in the organization of the massive and complex symbiotic web of life? What entity did that, according to the Sophianic vision story? Well, you fill in the name. And when you fill in the name, you will know that the legend of Amor and Psyche is a reflection of a massive event on this planet. A massive event that took place in one respect by the intervention of that entity to assist Sophia in her multitasking. But at the same time, this is an ongoing event. And I assure you that there is a return of that entity into full collaboration with Sophia imminently as I speak. And not I or anyone else on the planet can possibly predict or imagine what the ramifications of that return shall be. But I'm telling you that transpeciation is underway, and I am under close instruction as regarding particulars of it that I could not have received 12 years ago. Now I'm fortunately in the position to be able to learn more because I can transmit more. You see, my position is because I teach what I'm learning, the more I teach, the more I learn. You know. So this is my privilege, and it is yours as well, because the learning process is fractal, and it fractally magnifies through all those who participate in it. So these are some, this is kind of a rambling view, if you will, of some of the things that I'm currently learning, which represent a lavish instruction, needless to say. A rich, detailed, and lavish instruction, such that it's not always easy for me to report on what I'm getting at the moment that I'm getting it. But to return finally to the point of that which lies outside the parameters of this experiment, If you want to know what Kala Tantra is, you want to pursue those themes that I began in six or seven talks with Grok. The furtherance of that discussion will be posted either on metahistory.org or on Kali Rising, but will not be posted on gayaspora.org, which remains exclusive to the matters concerning the navigation experiment. I've had some difficulty myself, and I think I mentioned this before, in maintaining that firewall. And I'll tell you exactly why. I mean, I am going to maintain it. You can count on that. I don't want to implicate anyone in this experiment in the lethal initiatives of Kala Tantra, obviously. But it's increasingly difficult for me to maintain that experiment, maintain that distinction, because I see, due to my current instruction, what the mother wants for correction. What the mother wants from us for correction. And I had the opportunity to receive a pretty massive dose of instruction on this matter not too long ago. That is to say, on the occasion of the last perigee surge, which occurred on July 1st in 12 degrees of Sagittarius. Now, I tried to stand up and walk around and be ambulatory and conscious and rational for the better part of this surge. And I guess I did okay, but at a certain moment, basically, I had to pass out from the intensity. I would say that on that day, July 1st, what was it, a Sunday? I think so. Yeah, July 1st, perigee surge, 12 Sagittarius on Teres, preparation of the venom. Well, at a certain point I passed out, and I was in a state, I'd say for about 6 hours, it was a curious state to be in. You know, they used to use the term hypnagogic. H-Y-P-N-A-G-O-G-I-C. This is a term that comes from the infant years of psychoanalysis, hypnagogic. Hypnagogic hallucinations were said to be those hallucinations which were both visual and audio that you receive when you're in the twilight state between sleeping and waking. So normally, just before you fall into sleep, you pass into a state whether you are neither asleep nor awake. And in that liminal condition, as it's technically called, you would be subject to hypnagogic hallucinations. So I was in a state of hypnagogic hallucinations for 6 hours. I was aware that I wasn't asleep. I was aware that I wasn't awake. And by and large, these hallucinations were auditory rather than visual. Reason why I tend to have auditory hallucinations, whereas some of you may tend to have visual ones, is simply a division of NLP. And we're two kinds of artists. It's like stalkers and dreamers. A stalker has a tendency to auditory phenomenon, a predisposition to auditory hallucinations, and auditory acuity. A dreamer has a different NLP, and you have predisposition to visual hallucinations. Don Juan provided an enormous service to us, to use a very non-Gaian term, service, by providing the syntax of stalkers and dreamers. I consider this, as you know, to be one of the supreme contributions of Castaneda in the warm-up to Planetary Tantra. So I was having, as a stalker, which I am, intense auditory hallucinations for 6 hours during this perigee surge. But I also had a visual hallucination. And I'll tell you what it was. You know, you can work with anything in shamanism and tantra. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. The fictional and the actual are just material to work with. I don't know if it's actually true that Antares is a red giant 600 times larger than the sun. It may be true, it may not be true. This is what scientists say. Okay, big deal. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. What matters is that I have registered in my cerebral syntax the data that says Antares is an orange giant 600 times more massive than the sun. So then what happens is that I go and look at my own brain, or I look through the syntax circuitry of my brain at the Nahual, because Antares is really the Nahual. It's the unknown. We are surrounded by the unknown. The tip of your nose is a Nahual. You don't know what the tip of your nose is, but you have an NLP circuit syntax description of it. So use it. So I used my syntax and I went to look at Antares. And as I got closer and closer and closer, I saw that this massive orange giant was not what it appeared to be. I saw, as it were, a blue screen. Imagine a blue screen in front of you, vertical. And there appears to be a big orange circle on this blue screen. Let's say the screen is a pale blue. Somehow in this hallucination, the sky around Antares was pale blue. It wasn't the night sky. Pale blue screen with a big orange circle on it, like a big, like an orange, flat orange, textured, like the sun is textured, like the surface of an orange has texture, sunspots, filaments. As I got closer, I realized that there was no flat orange circle on this blue screen. There was a circular hole in the screen. Just a circular hole. And as I got closer, I looked through the circular hole, and I saw that behind the circular hole was the source of what appeared to be this orange entity. And as I got closer to the hole and was actually able to look into the hole, I saw that behind the hole in the blue screen, behind the circular aperture, was a huge, round, orange object. And what was that? Well, the head of a spider, a big orange spider. And as I got closer, I didn't put my head through the hole, but I was able to look, you see, close enough into the aperture to see what was behind the aperture. I saw that there was a massive orange spider with 8 legs. And through this audio, through this visual hallucination, as it were a vehicle, as it were a circuit momentarily constructed in my mind for me to receive an instruction from the cosmos. That instruction really came from the planetary animal mother. You could say that she showed me, as I contemplated Antares, this unique perigee hit, the planetary animal mother showed me the cosmic manifestation of her own power as a massive orange spider. Spider woman. No big deal. I'm certainly not the first shaman who's had this perception. What is Gaia Sophia called in indigenous mythology of the Native Americans? Spider woman. Changing woman. Weaving woman. And then I received, in audio hallucination, the instruction of the spider. The instruction of the spider concerns the production of venom in the human animal. The venom to be used against interspecies predators. Well, I'm not going to say any more about this because I don't want to implicate you in what I received. I just want to leave you with one resonant hint. Ask yourselves this question. And you should ask this question. In fact, I want all crew members to ask themselves this question, because this question can determine if you stay within the limits of the Gaian navigation experiment or if you want to take the risk of going over and hanging out in the Kala Tantra sandbox. Ask yourself this question. What does the planetary animal mother want from human animals for her correction? She is doing everything she can to achieve correction of Anthropos 10 and to recalibrate the Anthropos for the next Kalpa, Anthropos 11. And she's doing a lot. And she does most of it. But she does require something from humanity, to use that hackneyed term. She does require something from humanity for her correction. And what is it? What does she require of us? Now, I'm going to be a tricky narwhal here. And I'm actually going to act like a spider and pull you into my web. But it's not a web of deceit. It's a web of delight. It's a web of enlightenment and delightenment. So I'm going to pull you into my web of delightenment by answering my own question and leaving you with a further question. What is it that the planetary animal mother requires of the human animal to assist her correction? Listen up, folks. She requires proof of love. Proof of your love. And so now I would ask you the second question. I'm sure it's already forming in your minds. Before I speak, how many seconds, how many milliseconds did it take for the second question to form in your minds? Well, what is proof of love in the human animal on her terms? What is it? What could you do now in this life, right here, on this planet? What commitment could you make? How could you offer your life? To assist her correction by proving your love to her. How could you do that? You may recall that sometime back I provided a kind of master model of the perigee surges that would happen in the scales. I indicated that there would be hits in the right and the left-hand pans of the scales. The perigee surges would then move into the scorpion, and then back into the scales again, and then finally into the scorpion and through the scorpion to the point of the conclusion of the initial conditions of correction. So let me review just for a moment how those perigee surges have been operating. You will recall that we had perigee surges in the right and the left pans of the scales, and I indicated that the right pan of the scales, which is not disturbed, whose contents are not spilled out by the thrust of the scorpion, by the blow of the scorpion's claw, represent commodities in terms of the interpretation of the scales as the paradigm of world economy or trade or commodities and currencies. The right-hand part of the scales is commodities. The left-hand is currencies. And we know, of course, that the big hit in the right-hand of the scales that occurred in November of 2011 corresponded almost to the day with the MF global crisis, when investors stole from the commodities for their gambling and their mafia casino market games. And this was the beginning of the end of the global market economy. December 22nd, closely timed to the solstice, we had a hit in the left pan of the scales. That is the one that represents commodities. That is to say, the artificially assigned values of things as opposed to the actual value. We're looking here at the disequilibrium between the real economy, which concerns goods and services that really matter in life, and the artificial or archontic fake economy. And it is absolutely remarkable that a great part of the central period of correction involves perigee hits in this constellation, because this is exactly the time we see the global economy coming apart at the seams. Then in January 17th, we had another hit in 16 Scorpio in the right pan. February 11th, however, the perigee jumped back into the Virgin, and then was another immunization blow, another immunization event in the Virgin, and also in March 10th, 2012, again in the Virgin. But by April 7th, 2012, we had the last hit in the Virgin, in the knees of the Virgin. So then again, we come to the next detectable perigee surge in the right pan of the scales, and this is really interesting. On May 6th, just 2 months ago, there was a perigee surge in 16 Scorpio, and I would point out to you that on that day, or very close to that day, a leading financial predator, Jamie Dimon, head of J.P. Morgan Chase, announced that there had been a massive loss. He announced that it was $2 billion, but it could be more. In the language of which these people speak, that means it will be more. Now it turns out to be at least $9 billion, if not $16. The systematic controlled demolition of J.P. Morgan Chase is part of the orchestrated breakdown of the global economy. That announcement of J.P. Morgan Chase, which is ongoing today and is in the financial news every day, occurred on May 16th. Now, May 6th. Now, you may think it doesn't fit because J.P. Morgan Chase represents the false economy, the archonic casino economy of markets, derivatives, collateralized debt obligations, and things like this, which are all toxic and fictional financial instruments. But the amazing thing is that announcement from J.P. Morgan Chase, that announcement of a $2 billion loss, came from the desk of their commodities office in London. And I would have you, some of you who are interested in some of you who are watching for events to come to consider very closely who is the chief head of the commodities desk of J.P. Morgan in London. So anyway, then on June 3rd, there was another hit in 30 degrees of the scorpion. It's right where the scorpion's claw is whacking the scales. This hit can be reflected in the continuing instability of the pricing of silver and gold. They are commodities, but the price fixing and the LIBOR scandal, LIBOR, go search that. The LIBOR scandal came to light in early June and is now ongoing. This is about the price fixing of the whole entire financial market, and that corresponds exactly, as we know, to the meaning of the left pan of the scales. This all brings us down to July 1st and the direct perigee hit in the heart of the scorpion, of which I've just given you some lurid details from the life of the Nahual. So it looks like I might be disposed to go into a third briefing here, presenting you three briefings in sequence. 14, Cosmic Novelty. 15, Proof of Love. And 16, well, how appropriate. Okay, so I'll follow this up by doing Navigator Briefing 16. Funny how this number comes up, because I am also in close instruction, too close to relate to you, as it happens. But I've also been in close instruction about the magic number 16. Now let's jump back here for a moment to the question of communication. How we communicate, how am I communicating to you now? I'm communicating to you on electronic and archonic technology. But could I communicate to you in the same way without this technology? If you wondered about that, well, I most certainly could. I most certainly could. And the psychotronic technology, mark that word, the Gaian psychotronic technology, for two-way communication over this planet in the post-correction period is now underway. Recall that in the previous briefing, I described pleromic relay by analogy to a 21-point cable that connects a VCR to a TV monitor. Let me say a little bit more about the particulars of that relay instrument. When the three braids emanated from the pleuromic core pass through the spindling device, they configure into a 21-band spectrum. This 21-band spectrum is the head of the connective cable. It has like 21 pins in it. You're familiar with that image. Keep using that image. Imagine that there is a cable with a 21-pin head that is plugged in to the electromagnetic field of the Earth on June 16, 2012, and that by September 7th, 2012, the complete two-way transmission facilitated by that cable will be accomplished and operating full-scale, non-stop, 724. Imagine that. Also, I'd have you pay close attention to the operative phrase, two-way. Look at the construction of the head of this cable. 7 times 3, 21 discrete frequencies in pleuromic relay, streaming from the galactic core via the Pleiades. What do these 21 frequencies, these tendrils or tentacles of massive pleuromic and electromagnetic plasmic current, what do they do when they plug in and engage the atmosphere of the Earth? Well, I'd have you point out that everything I do and say about the dynamics of the Earth is based on my direct experience of the Shakti Cluster. The Shakti Cluster is the console of conscious animating powers of the planetary mother animal. It is her instrument of awakening. It is her technology, as you will, if you will. It is the Gaian technology of the Aeon Sophia herself. This is the Shakti Cluster. Now let me remind you of the structure of the Shakti Cluster, which is a matter of unending and deepening study and can never, ever be exhausted. I received, as you know, the vision of the construction of the Shakti Cluster in August of 2008, and it is a primary factor in the terma of Gaia Awakening. The Shakti Cluster has 18 points, of which only 16 are active transmitting points. So, the enumerated modalities, 1 through 18 of those enumerated modalities, 2 are set aside. So when you think about the Shakti Cluster, you always need to think about it with a kind of cognitive distinction in your mind. You must think about it in two ways at once. You must think about it as 18 and 16. In its totality, it's 18 points. But 2 of those points are peculiar. Modality 17 is the grounding point of the Shakti Cluster. It is equivalent to a lightning rod on a building or a lightning rod at the top of a ship, something that receives and discharges any kind of energy that would come to the Shakti Cluster that would disturb or threaten its integral functions and its integral structure. And that is represented symbolically and iconographically by the figure of Dutro Lamo. I chose this just more or less arbitrarily. I mean, Dutro Lamo is the guardian of tertons and of termas in Tibetan Buddhism, particularly in the Nyingma tradition. And if you go look at the book Demonic Divine from the Rubin Museum in New York, you'll see amazing black tankas of Dutro Lamo. Point 17 of the Shakti Cluster is Dutro Lamo. It's simply the grounding point. It has no active transmitting power, but it has enormous protective power. The Terma of Gaia Awakening and the integral console of the Shakti Cluster is immensely and cosmically protected against any kind of archontic interference or any kind of extraterrestrial interference. I'm looking now at the moon rising over through the trees on the hills to the east of my house. It's called the gibbous moon. It's the waning moon. It's a little lopped off on one side. It looks like a distorted egg. I can see it behind the limbs of the trees. So much for point 17. Point 18 in the Shakti Cluster is the channel of Vivi herself. So, point 18 is included in the integral 16. The 2 points that are not included in the integral 16 of active transmitting filaments are 16 and 17. So what is 16? What is channel 16? In the Shakti cluster. Until now, I haven't been able to explain this. I am under close and constant instruction regarding how to tell you what this is. And I'm not just going to tell you what it is. It's my intention to demonstrate what it is for you and with you. Channel 16 is the transmitting channel by contrast to the other modalities, which are receiving channels. As a human animal, you can receive transmissions on 16 frequencies from the planetary mother animal, one frequency of which is her own way of talking to you. That would be channel 18. Channel 18 is Vivi's own consecrated channel. It's Vivi transmits through all the Mahavidya and Dakini frequencies to anyone and everyone. You can receive transmission from channel 13, which is Kurukula. It's an operative channel. It's open. It's like a channel on a radio station. If you tune the dial to that channel, you receive the broadcast on that station. And the broadcast on channel 13 is the same for everyone. But the broadcast on channel 18 is your instruction one-on-one with Vivi. Channel 16 is not for receiving. Channel 16 is the sending frequency. I'll pick up this thought and elaborate the implications of this thought in the following briefing. So this is three briefings coming in a row here. But to give you some idea of what this means and how it relates to pleuromic relay, return to the picture of the head of the cable with 21 points. What happens when this cable plugged into the geomagnetic field of the Earth on June 16th is that 16 of the filaments in the head of the relay locked into 16 frequencies in the Shakti cluster. The 16 transmitting frequencies in the Shakti cluster are now amplified and supported by pleuromic relay. But that leaves 5 points of the head of the relay that are not engaged, because 21 minus 16 is 5. So just as you would have the head of a connective cable for VCR that would plug in to a TV monitor, and then the TV monitor would engage 16 of those points, and through those 16 relay points, it would produce an image on the screen proceeding from the VCR. But what about the other 5 points? Well, get this. Imagine if you could stand in front of this TV monitor screen that's plugged into a VCR. And in the VCR is a CD-ROM which is showing a nature program, like one of Richard Attenborough's nature things about animals, the behavior of plants. Through 16 points of the relay cable, data is streaming from the VCR to the screen, and you're seeing these images of nature. You're hearing Richard Attenborough talk. This is not interactive. You can't talk back to Richard Attenborough, can you? You can only watch. You can't talk back to the image of the sea turtle. You can't affect the swimming of the sea turtle through the sea or the flight of the gulls that you're seeing on this nature film. But there are five pins on the cable that are not occupied with transmitting data from the VCR. And those five pins constitute the structure of channel 16, which is the sending channel. So just as the archontic scientists of today are proposing that we interface with machines and that we have mental telepathy with our computers, I am proposing that we have mental telepathy with the entire planet in ascending capacity through channel 16. This is the Gaian technology of the future of this planet. And it's my intention, sitting here tonight as the moon rises, not only to articulate that technology and describe it, but to test it in the course of this experiment.